Town Talk.
Now, I'm joined by another Duke, Sean Duke from Science Spinning. Sean, you're very welcome. Sean, as ever, we're talking about science and how science and, I suppose, the world we live in interact. And you've a number of different topics today, which I'm looking forward to. And they're kind of a mixed bag. So we'll kick off, because the first one is about what science can tell us about getting ahead in the world. It isn't a nasty business. So, I mean, I always thought, you know, the good guys come last and you have to be tough and bang heads and whatnot. What does science say about this?
Yeah, well, it's a common thing that nice guys come last. And, you know, is it true, though? And scientists found, they looked at this over a decade, so it's a very long study. And what they actually found, which will be a relief to a lot of us that aren't nasty, is that nasty people are no more likely to reach positions of power than nice people. So the study was done in the U.S. at the business school in the University of Berkeley in California, and they found, you know, the researchers found that aggressive, selfish, and manipulative people, we all know a few of those, what happens is that they can create such a toxic work environment that this can cause businesses to fail. So it's not a very good thing, actually. And the example in the U.S. that's often given of somebody who is nasty that got ahead is Steve Jobs, who people will know, the deceased Apple CEO. And apparently he wasn't a very nice person, and there's lots of stories about how he treated people, but he was extremely successful. So the question is, do we need to be like Steve Jobs to get on? So what they did was they invited 670 students in the U.S. To take these personality tests. They did this over 10 years, starting in 1999, and they asked them various questions. And then 14 years later, they went back to the same people. And at this stage, they're in, you know, their 30s and they're well into their careers. And they essentially asked the people themselves about where they were in their job, what their level of responsibility was, how they were getting on, what power they held in the company, but also possibly more importantly, they interviewed all their co-workers or as many as they could find to get their thoughts on the people themselves, mm-hmm. or whether they're nice to work with, etc. And what they found was that the study clearly showed that nice people, people that were regarded as nice by their colleagues, were just as much in positions of power as nasty people, regardless of the organization, because we do hear in certain businesses, whether it's whatever, journalism, for example, that the more cutthroat you are, that you might get ahead. But in fact, that doesn't apply even in some industries which are regarded as cutthroat. And that while, you know, if you're more aggressive initially, it can help you to climb the corporate ladder. So at the early stages, it seems to help in the first couple of years when you're trying to climb the greasy pole. But then as you need to build relationships and you get on in your career and you fall out with colleagues, then those initial early benefits are cancelled out. So there you go. You don't have to be a bad guy or girl to get on.
Well, that's good news for everybody, I think, out there. So if you have a nice boss as opposed to a nasty boss, isn't that good, you know? Happy days.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you to the scientists for explaining that one to us and the work they did. The next one is one where I had mixed views, but you're going to tell us, I'm sure, something different. Why long naps may be bad for you? We all sort of thought, you know, you take a siesta in the afternoon, that's a good idea. The Spanish do it and it doesn't do them any harm. Is a nap good or bad?
Well, it seems it depends on how long you take the nap for. And sometimes I take naps, so this is why this comes my way. And, you know, you hear of people during the day, if you're tired or you've been up early to do a job or whatever, that you take a quick nap and you're reinvigorated then in the afternoon. And, you know, I've one friend who used to lock his office door after lunch and have a quick nap. And he said he was much better after it. But now this research, which is coming out of a very reputable place, they've a world meeting of cardiologists each year, so it's just taken place. And there was a paper research presented by Chinese researchers. And what they found is that if you have a nap during the day for an hour or more, actually that's not good. And they found that it increases the risk of dying prematurely or cardiovascular disease by a third, which is very
high. Wow.
So if you're tired and you take a nap for, say, half an hour, that seems to be fine. But if you're taking a nap which is longer than 60 minutes during the day, that's certainly not fine. And they found that the effect was more pronounced even in women for some reason. This is just new research. They're not sure why. And in older people where the risks were even higher. And also it should be said that most at risk were the people who were probably, to say, they were getting enough sleep at night anyway. So they were getting more than 6 hours sleep a night, say 7 or 8 hours sleep a night. And then they were napping during the day. So, you know, they didn't really need the nap, if you like. Those people were very much at risk. And what the researcher says is that, you know, this idea that napping improves our performance during the day and it counteracts the negative consequences of not getting enough sleep, that actually might not be true. And we have to take it seriously because they looked at over 300,000 people. So it was a massive study involving 20 different locations. And usually when you get those kind of numbers, you have to take the risk seriously. And they found a 30% greater risk of all-cause death and cardiovascular disease. Now, one thing that occurred to me was that, you know, maybe it's not the napping. Now, this is just my own idea now on it, but maybe it's not the napping per se, but what it says. So in other words, if you're a person who maybe is overweight, for example, or you're not very active, then you might take naps. The napping might be a symptom of the real issue, if you like. But in any case, they think that the reason that naps might be a problem is that some studies have suggested they're linked with inflammation. So you might know inflammation is how the body reacts to something alien being in the body, if you like. And when you get an overreaction, you get a problem, like, for example, with COVID. You know, a lot of the problems with COVID are the body basically panics when it's got this virus inside it, and it reacts, but it overreacts. And then the defense mode that the body goes into causes a problem. So this is inflammation, and they think that napping may increase the levels of inflammation, which is going to affect your blood pressure, could cause diabetes, all of those kind of things. So the message, if you like, is if you're going to take a nap, then make sure it's less than an hour. Maybe half an hour is enough.
So a short nap, okay. A long nap, not okay. But like you, I'm only speculating because they did 300,000 samples, so they kind of know what they're talking about. But you'd expect if somebody's going for an hour in the afternoon and if they've had their normal night's sleep, they're not going for a walk or they're not exercising or they're not sort of looking after lifestyle in that way.
Exactly. That was my thinking on it, that, you know, maybe it's not the nap, but it's the fact, as you say, that instead of going for a walk, they're having a rest and lying on the couch. But look, that's speculation. It's something to watch out for. And whatever way you look at it, it's not a good idea to be taking these long naps during the day.
Okay, we hope we haven't ruined somebody's day now if they like their little nap or their big nap in the afternoon, but it's not a good idea. Okay, that's what the scientists say, Sean. Sean, the next one is an interesting one. I can't believe I'm even asking this question, but what if we could live to be a million years old? A million years old. I mean, does anything live to be a million years old?
I know. This sounds like something that you might find in a tabloid newspaper, but actually, this is something I picked up in Scientific American, which is one of the main science journals in America, very well respected. And it's a scientist who's speculating. And what triggered this really was that scientists have discovered bacteria that are buried, that were buried beneath the ocean floor, and the scientists reckon they were there for 100 million years and they were still alive. So, you know, these little bacteria were able to live for 100 million years. And we know that with medicine, modern medicine, that we're living much longer and we're tackling things like inflammation, which I just mentioned, and serious people like Luke O'Neill, who people will know, the scientist in Trinity College, who's on the news a lot these days. I spoke to him and he thinks that we're going to be living to 120 years old. Not our generation, maybe, Pat, but the one after us. So we're going to live longer and who knows how long. So the question is, what will we do with all that extra time? If we are in this post-COVID future world where diseases are essentially, you know, most of them are cured and we've got this very long lifestyle, what would we do? So one thing that the scientist was speculating on was that, you know, we live quite short lives. So this means that when we're talking about, say, the planet and trying to save the planet, if you like, that it doesn't really connect with people that well because they think, well, you know, I'm not going to be around that long.
It's not my problem.
It's not my problem, yeah. So if we're going to be around for a million years or even, say, 200 years, we might think more about the planetary environment in a real way because it's going to affect us, our pollution, or all of those long-term problems. You know, we tend to be very short-termist species. What else? Well, we might think it would be an awful tragedy to send people like young soldiers to war, because if you have the possibility to live a very long life, a couple of hundred years, million years, who knows what's possible, why would you risk it? And somebody could die at the age of 19 or 20 in a war, so that might be a good thing. The other thing, you can interject with questions anytime you like.
Well, I'm just thinking that there are positives, and you mentioned some of them there, that we will be more long-term and think about the planet and wars and all the rest of it. But there's going to be a lot of people on this planet. How are we going to cope with all the extra bodies?
Yes, this has been talked about since the 1960s with this population explosion, when there was only about 2.5 million people when I was born in the 60s, and now we're up to 7, heading for 8 billion. And they thought there was too many then, and there's probably certainly too many now. And if people are living long, long lives, then you're going to have a lot, lot more people. So what do you do? Well, you could limit the birth rate. You could do what China does. That's one thing. But you could say, philosophical terms, is that fair to limit the birth rate? Because then the people who are on the planet are stopping the opportunity for others to live, you know? So that's a question. Alternatively, we're getting to the stage now where we're going to be going to the moon again. We're going to be going to Mars within the next decade, it seems. We're going to be finally starting to set up little hubs on these other planets. So maybe in the future we could allow people to emigrate, or maybe force them to emigrate, and just leave the population on Earth with enough that's there to, you know, that would fit the supply of food and energy that we have on the Earth. One thing that I think would be very interesting or exciting would be that maybe we could go on these long space journeys, because at the moment, if we travel to Mars, which is close, relatively speaking, it's our neighbor, that's going to take a couple of years to get there. So if you wanted to travel to, say, another solar system, it just wouldn't be possible in a human lifespan. So imagine if we could live very long lives, then we might be able to travel to our nearest star, Proxima Centauri, which we know probably has a habitable planet. Who knows? We might meet aliens there. It would make it possible. And then the other thing is, like, what might happen to us is we'd still be at risk. You know, it wouldn't mean that we would become immortal, because, for example, the dinosaurs, who dominated the planet for hundreds of millions of years — we're only here for a couple of millions of years — the dinosaurs were dominating the Earth, and then along comes an asteroid. It causes a huge drop in global climate, and they weren't adapted to it, and they all were wiped out. So, you know, it doesn't mean that we're invulnerable. And there's all kinds of possibilities. Another one is, like, what will happen with artificial intelligence? Will we use that for our own benefit? Will we harness that, or will it destroy us? All of these questions. And then there are even these thinkers that I've read that think that ultimately what's going to happen, and it's a real mind blower, is that we'll go post-biological. So that we'll somehow, the idea is that we'll become so good at robotics and all of those kind of things that we'll somehow transfer ourselves into these kind of robots, if you like, and we'll be essentially immortal. But, I mean, these are all — I find them fun to talk about, but certainly it's true that we will be living longer lives, and we're going to need to think about what we're going to do with those longer lives.
Well, it's a little bit in the realms of science fiction, but going back to your opening point, I mean, the scientists have found bacteria that's 100 million years old and alive, still alive. So if bacteria can do it, you know, maybe we can learn how to do what they do. Sean, I was just thinking, when you're talking there, though, if we do live to be a million years, you know what we're going to need? A very big birthday cake.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to manage that one. Well, maybe if you're a million years old, you could just have one candle.
One candle. Yeah, it's a thought. The mind boggles, Sean. It absolutely does. And all those things. Sean, it's as ever intriguing talking to you. I'm going to leave it at that. But thank you very much. And Sean, as ever, if we want to see more of what you do and say, Science Spinning, yes?
ScienceSpinning.com is my blog.
Science Spinning's the place to go. Sean Duke, science correspondent from Science Spinning, thank you very much.